contemplation is there, motivation, inspiration, you know, propellant is there. When's it looking at you now? And when does it get released from the clutches of that? But if the consciousness changes, so that's the karma position. Fruitive worker, the pious fruitive worker, not just like the atheistic fruitive worker, a pious religious man or woman. The elevationist notion implicates. And then there's this much smaller section that are interested in moksha, or the soul merging into the existence of the Supreme. But that's also all over the world, not just in India. All over the world. And that's the Gyani position. It's, you know, you might be surprised, you might not be surprised, but Gyanis, they really like Sankhya. They rub their hands together and get excited with Sankhya because for them, it's detachment from matter and merging with Brahman. Jnana Vairagya, the fruit of that Vairagya is merging with Brahman. As far as they're concerned, that's it. And Kapila Dev is not an atheist. He's a theist. He's the personality of God, and he's teaching knowledge and detachment that lead to fixing the mind upon the Supreme or Super Soul and living one's life in that way and engaging in devotional service in that way. So meditation upon Super Soul can be like the yogi sitting doing his, you know, sadhana, and he's meditating on the Supreme Lord. And moving about, conducting the affairs of life, fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord. And how do you fix your mind upon the Supreme Lord when you're moving about doing stuff? It's like your question about when you're in the workplace, how do you do it? And the answer is really simple, too simple. For some people, that which you are attached to, that's where your mind goes. You develop an attachment with the Supreme Lord, and that's where your mind goes. So, the difficulty is we're attached to something other, but behind that other is a desire to be an independent enjoyer. So, we were hearing in these previous verses about the real independence of living entity is to engage in devotional service. That's the maximum freedom living entity can have. We're still dependent, but the maximum independence. A visual image for me is from visiting India, what they do with cows. Put the cow on a rope, and then the rope, the other end of the rope has a stake, and they put the stake in the ground, so the cow can eat grass within a certain circumference, and not beyond. And supposing, you know, it's a shorter rope or a longer rope, but they're still under a rope. The modes of nature, guna means rope. We're under the control of the gunas. We may think we're free and independent, or under the control of the gunas. Now, supposing somebody becomes a devotee, it's like a cow that doesn't ever roam. The cow is free then to roam wherever the cow wishes to roam. You know, the cowherd, or, you know, the agriculturalist, they put up a fence, and can't just go wandering into the woods, get lost, or down in a river or a stream. But, you know, restricted freedom. So that's the devotee. There are things that we don't do because it's not for Krishna, so we don't do them. And what is for Krishna, do them. And so, like the cow without a rope. Now, to look in the pasture, there's the cow with a rope and the cow without a rope. It looks the same. But one has a rope and the other has a rope. And that's the message that's being presented here. Two persons engaged side by side in apparently similar, if not identical, activity. Prabhupada gives the example of the purports of the industrialist, or the materialist that builds a skyscraper, and the devotee that builds a temple. They're both engaged in construction. Look at it from the external point of view, and it's the same activity. They're gathering stone, bricks, and cement, wood, and whatever else, and they're assembling it to make something. But externally, it looks the same. But one is attached to being the enjoyer of that, or the profits that come from that, and the honor and distinction and glory that comes from that, and the other is what is simply interested in serving the Supreme Lord. Very nice. Because I was just in Mayapur, is reading this for the purport, I was thinking of Henry Ford's grandson, Alfred Ford, Ambarish. So, Prabhupada said to Ambarish, don't squander the hard-earned money of your predecessors, grandfather Henry Ford. Henry Ford believed in reincarnation. That was like in a time in the West where it wasn't like popular. That was popular. Really popular. I don't know if people even know what it means, but it was popular. At that time it wasn't popular, but he wrote about it in his writing and his memoirs and things. So somewhere in that family there's some, besides the punya to become wealthy, there's a connection to the, you know, a conception of the soul beyond the body. Now here's his grandson having this wealth, something like, I think the figure is $22 million of this ancestor's wealth is gone to build the temple. And there's a little video of the room conversation where Prabhupada suggested that. It was in Detroit. Very interesting. I'll just describe it a little bit. The scene, Prabhupada would sit on a little cushion and a little table in front of him, or a large table in front of him. In the room, there were different devotees in the room, kind of a large room. And there, where they were sitting was the Fisher Mansion, called the Fisher Mansion because the building, the Detroit Temple, was built by a man whose name was Fisher. When I was growing up, it was Body by Fisher. So he was a designer of chassis of automobiles. And so the son, this is, you know, Detroit, the son of Henry Ford, and the daughter of Walter Reuther. Walter Reuther was the automobile worker, labor workers, union people. So like, you know, the labor and management strife that always exists since time immemorial. So the daughter of the auto workers union, the laborers, his daughter combined her father's wealth with Henry Ford's grandson's wealth to buy a mansion built by Mr. Fisher. people are probably just thinking about the automobile capital of the United States, at least in the past. Let's see what happens going into the future. Still is. So they're sitting in the Fisher Mansion, in this large room, and Prabhupada starts speaking. The video shows that somebody was over Prabhupada's shoulder, so you can see Prabhupada here and the other people in the room. Like that, then you could move, you would then see Prabhupada and the people in the room. So Prabhupada was speaking about his desire to have a temple in Mayapur, where the Srimad Bhagavatam 5th canto could be showcased for the world. Fifth canto speaks of cosmology. So he then, Prabhupada, described in that room, he would like to have a temple where there's a Vedic planetarium where the dome would have suspended from it a chandelier. You know what a chandelier is? Anyone not know what a chandelier is? You know? Lights attached to crystal that's hanging, and very, very ornate and beautiful and opulent, and it's suspended by something up in the ceiling. And that's a chandelier. It's a French chandelier. So Prabhupada described a chandelier-like apparatus. He was describing what he envisioned the Temple of Vedic Planetarium to me. And the point of attachment in the ceiling is North Pole, or North Star, or Dhruvaloka. And then all of the planets are circumambulating in the vertical dimension with their right side to Dhruvaloka, moving in that direction, some moving in smaller, some moving in bigger, but in vertical dimension, all the planetary systems are suspended from that chandelier-like apparatus. So he was describing that's what he wanted. This was something in the mid-1970s, 74, 75. And it was a very interesting conversation, because the fifth canto had recently been published. He was describing what he wanted. And then he, across the room, he turned to Amrish and smiled and said, "What do you think, Amrish? Would you like to make this temple happen?" It was an appeal for a donation. And Amrish said, "Sure, Prabhupada, that would be very wonderful." And that was it. Maybe one other comment, but because Amrish is who he is, he took that as an instruction from the spiritual master, and he made that his life and soul. He didn't do it right away, like Prabhupada received a nice instruction from Bhaktisiddhanta. Amrish received a nice instruction from Srila Prabhupada. And the building is going up. Superstructure should be completed soon, on target with their projection of $30 million, and it's only going to be another $30 million to complete the whole thing with all the finished work. And then something extra for the chandelier itself and for the planetarium, but they're working on anything on this. It's a labor of love. So they're... It's a nice example. There's scientists that are speculating whatever about cosmology, and there are devotees that are working on the authority of the Vedas to create a planetarium. There are artisans that are making the altars are, as you look at the altar, it's the Siddhic succession from Srila Prabhupada up to the six Goswamis in the back, there's six Goswamis. Then there's another row, and then there's another row. So artisans have made those figures of our acharyas. Amazing. And then the next altar is Panchatattva, and then the next altar is Radhamada and the Sakyas. So approaching Lord Chaitanya through the certain succession, through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, Radha Krishna. It's fantastic. I have, they gave us, I can give you a copy. They gave us a DVD, but it's on a little data stick. And it describes the work that they're doing. It's just, and they introduced us to all the artisans. And it's fantastic what they're doing. Fantastic. Fantastic. You know, really technical stuff, really artistic stuff, or, you know, it's engaging talent of such variety to do an amazing thing. And, you know, they brought them before us at the GBC meeting. This one does this, and that one does that. It's really nice. Really, really nice. So, worldly people, they're making museums and stuff, buildings, and, you know, technology, you know, interesting stuff. To the degree that one is interested in finding happiness through those things, or finding glory, or, you know, self-gratification, or honor, or whatever it is that somebody wants, it's binding. Same activity is liberating. And anything that you can think of. The distinction is the consciousness behind the activity. So, just two little points of review, and then I'll summarize what we're going to discuss. Text 24 says, by discovering the faultiness in his desiring to lord it over material nature, and by therefore giving it up, the living entity becomes independent and stands on his own glory. We mentioned that already again this morning. Independent doesn't mean absolute independence, that only that is Krishna. And this independent connects with what we're going to be discussing this morning. The Atmarama phrase is used in this morning's verse. So, satisfied in the self doesn't mean I don't care about Krishna. Satisfied in the self means I'm feeling full in my relationship with Krishna. Same, independent doesn't mean absolute independence. It means the fullness of freedom. The modes of nature are no longer binding. The rope is no longer there. One, by love, one is submissive to the Supreme Lord, not by a rope. By love. And then the last verse we discussed yesterday was this metaphor of dreaming. Remember the metaphor of dreaming? As in a dream, in the dreaming state, one's consciousness is almost covered, and one sees many inauspicious things. But when he is awakened and fully conscious, such inauspicious things cannot bewilder him. So the dreaming state is, in the metaphor, is material consciousness. I'm dreaming so many things. And the awakened state is the state of devotion, service, or Krishna consciousness. Or you can be, you know, in an atmosphere where there's stuff going on, and either you like or you don't like, it's pleasing or displeasing. There's duality happening, because this is the world of duality. But it doesn't, it's not bewildering. It's not contaminating the conditioned soul. So now, in this morning's two verses, 26-27, Kapila Deva is going to repeat something that was already mentioned. is just driving the point home further, which is that the point in one little sentence, it's addressing again the concern of Devahuti, which is the bewildering effect, the deluding effect of material nature upon the soul, how to extract the soul from that bewildering nature. So his point is, when one is engaged with the mind fixed upon the Supreme Lord, so not just doing things, not just chanting or worshiping or reading, but mind fixed upon the Supreme Lord, then the material influence cannot touch that soul, even when they be in the atmosphere. So religious activity, devotional service, requires proper conduct, but it also requires doing that proper conduct for the right reason, that is because it's pleasing to Krishna. And that way, the mind is upon the Supreme Lord. Whatever it is that one does, whatever it is, any time of the day, not just during the morning program, all day long, all the activities of the day. So here's 26, here's the repeated point. The influence of material nature cannot harm an enlightened soul, even though he engages in material activities. Because, two things, he knows the truth of the Absolute, and his mind is fixed on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Sanskrit phrase of the verse, Mani Manasam, is the first thing the Prabhupada speaks about. Lord Kapila says that Mani Manasam, a devotee whose mind is always fixed upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is called Atmarama. Or, these two terms are in the verse, vidita tattva. So vid means to know, and one who knows the truth, one who knows the Absolute, one who knows the cause of all causes, the Personality of Godhead. That person is the Atmarama, or devotee whose mind is, so there's theoretical, as the intelligence, proper discriminating faculty is there, proper guidance to guide the intelligence and the mind. Fixed. Atmarama means, quote, one who rejoices in the self, or, quote, one who enjoys in the spiritual atmosphere. Atma, in the material sense, means the body or the mind. But when referring to one whose mind is fixed on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Atma Rama means, quote, one who is fixed in spiritual activities in relationship with the Supreme Soul. The Supreme Soul is the Personality of Godhead, and the individual soul is a living entity, but they engage in reciprocation of service and benediction. The living entity is said to be in the Atma Rama position. This Atma Rama position can be attained by one who knows the truth as it is. The truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the enjoyer, and the living entity is meant for his service and enjoyment. One who knows this truth and who tries to engage all resources in the service of the Supreme Lord escapes all material reactions and influences of the modes of material nature. And then he gives the example of the skyscraper builder and the temple builder. Although both are engaged in the association of material activities, the devotee is liberated and the materialist is conditioned. Let's think of some other examples, just the application of the principle. Besides building buildings, what are other things that people do? Buy a house. The devotee buys a house, and the materialist buys a house. Looks the same. There's some money, they go to the seller, negotiate, and buy the house. One is liberating, the other is bondage. What's the difference? The purpose of service to Krishna is the distinction. So we're not meant to give up activities. Not possible. Anyhow. And we're meant to dedicate those activities to the Supreme Lord. So how do you get that consciousness of dedicating activities to the Supreme Lord? Well, I mentioned it yesterday evening. But it, you know, it, and it's also here. Constant hearing. Constant hearing. So it's exactly as we're doing at least, you know, daily. Trinvata Sokata Krishna Punyashavana Kirtana. Vidyan Tamstoya Bhagavani Vidyanoti Sarvatam. Vidyanoti Sarvatam. The heart becomes cleansed by the hearing process. Krishna Shosha Vidana Sarvasa Vidyanoti Siyana Sarvaya Punyatirti Shaman. So these nice verses from Canto 1, Chapter 2, they're teaching principles that now are being applied by Kapila Dev's teaching. And then there's this, the beginning stage, something that I'm spent some time with yesterday on this position of the role of faith. And at the beginning of devotion, faith is, one of the descriptions we have in the Bhagavatam is, faith is soft and pliable. That's the Kanishta stage. In the Madhyama stage, faith is firm. And in the perfect stage, it's absolute, unflinching. So, supposing we're going to be somewhere between, you know, super beginning stage and trying to become established in the intermediate stage. According to the teaching of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he calls that stage, the faith, as Shraddha Bhasa, Abhasa, just like Namabhasa. You know the term, Namabhasa. So, as there's the shadow of the holy name, there's the shadow or semblance of faith. And that semblance of faith, he describes, this is the role of faith in the unfolding of bhakti, that semblance of faith is, well, I like devotional service because I'll get relief of the modes of material nature. I'll get freedom from my past karma. It's nice, you chant the holy name and more reaction to sinful activity than you commit can be incinerated, just burned. Just one name. So I like this chanting of the name because I don't want to suffer. I want to enjoy it. And that's the reflection of the holy name. Prabhupada makes this very clear in the next purport. That's why I'm describing this. So there's the immature stage, then there's the mature stage. And the mature stage is, there's only one thing I want. And that's the satisfaction of Krishna. But we're not there yet, we're mixed. We want. And the stage of purity is, there's no want. Look at a verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi kami, sakare ashanta. You want one of those three things? Material enjoyment, liberation, mystic powers. Mind is disturbed, ashanta, unpeaceful. But one can become peaceful when there's only one thing. So, Kapila Dev is explaining to Devamurti how the soul can be extracted from its involvement in matter. It takes pure devotion. Mixed devotion, you get relief. Pure devotion, you get, you go back to Godhead. It's like, okay, supposing somebody has a headache, and you take a tablet to relieve your headache, but you still have a mature body, but later on you're going to get another headache or another pain or another problem. Why not? Well, where's that tablet that you don't have to take another body? That's the contrast of pure faith, or shuddha. Now, shuddha bhakti. So here's the text 27. When a person thus engages in devotional service and self-realization for many, many years and births, he becomes completely reluctant to enjoy any one of the material planets, even up to the highest planet, which is known as Brahmaloka. He becomes fully developed in consciousness. Fully developed in consciousness. So there's the not fully developed, but progressively more and more and more fully developed to the stage of fully developed. So listen to the beautiful purport. Anyone engaged in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of God is known as a devotee. But there is a distinction between pure devotees and mixed devotees. Mixed devotees engages in devotional service, sounds like us, for the spiritual benefit of being eternally engaged in the transcendental abode of the Lord in full bliss and knowledge. Sounds pretty good. In material existence, when a devotee is not completely purified, he expects material benefit from the Lord in the form of relief from material miseries, or he wants material gain, or advancement in knowledge. Chapter Vitabhajante Ma, Jena Supratimurjana, four types of pious people render devotional service. And the best of all of them is one who wants knowledge, but according to this purport, advancement in knowledge of the relationship between the Supreme Personality of God and the living entity still is on the mixed side. I want, I want, I want, I want. Or knowledge as to the real nature of the Supreme Lord. When a person is transcendental to these conditions, he is called a pure devotee. He does not engage himself in the service of the Lord for any material benefit or for understanding of the Supreme Lord. His one interest is that he loves the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he spontaneously engages in satisfying him. And the final purport, guess who Prabhupada points to? You guessed it, the devotees. They are not interested in understanding Krishna, but only in loving him. Of course, all the residents are with God. Pure love, not who is he? I want to understand him. It's just pure love. Amazing. That platform of love is the pure state of devotional service. Unless one is advanced to this pure state of devotional service, there is a tendency to desire elevation to a higher material position. A mixed devotee may desire to enjoy a comfortable life on another planet with a greater span of life, such as on Brahmaloka. These are material desires. But because a mixed devotee engages in the service of the Lord, ultimately, after many, many lives of material enjoyment, he undoubtedly develops Krishna consciousness. Isn't that nice? I mean, what a definition of Krishna consciousness is. And the symptom of this Krishna consciousness is that he is no longer interested in any sort of materially elevated life. He does not even aspire to become a personality like Lord Prabhupada. You know what the fastest growing religion in the world is? The Mormon faith. You heard of that here?
It's a type of Christian religion.
Statistically in the world,
they do, it was in Kerala, during our South India. There's a lot of Catholic. So you have Christian churches all over Kerala, but you know, a very prominent brand is Mormon faith. Their ideal, like, you know, the topmost thing that you can reach, if you ever meet such a person, you can ask them, what's the ultimate? You become the creator. You attain the postal code of Brahman. They don't use the language of Brahman, but that's like the topmost attainment. But here in the language of the Bhagavatam, that's Kaitava Dharma, or material motivated religion. Now, we're mixed, so we shouldn't, you know, be snobs or condescending and looking at other people and saying, well, we've got the best thing. So we shouldn't do that. I was just reading something Bhaktisiddhanta said. This teaching is not for that purpose, like, you know, scolding people that don't have a higher objective. They don't have a higher objective because they're implicated in matter. They don't have association with pure devotees that know that distinction. And pure devotees that know that distinction, they make the distinction, but not in a condescending way, in a way to elevate souls that come to the stage of pure devotional service, which is what Kapila Deva is doing with Devahuti. And we're recipients of the same good fortune. At least the opportunity is being extended. We can say yes or no, or maybe, but the opportunity is being extended. That's the mercy of Srimad Bhagavatam. Any discussion?
Yeah, thanks. Actually, how to understand that Krishna is the only enjoyer? Because the tendency to enjoy for myself is so inbuilt.
Sure.
That even in devotional service, I have the tendency to enjoy.
Sure. Well, you know, we're conditioned souls. So the starting point is, how are we to understand it?
Yeah.
It's who Krishna is. Because, it goes slowly. The living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. Like the spark is unto the fire, or the drop is unto the reservoir of water. So, as the spark has qualities like the fire, we have qualities like Krishna. So, if you have a tendency to enjoy, imagine what Krishna's tendency is. Because he's the supreme enjoyer. We have that tendency because we're part and parcel of Krishna, who has that unlimitedly. That's why it's there. So how are we to understand that the real position of happiness is the position of love? The world wants love, but even the conception of love is selfishness. I get something from someone or something, and therefore I love my dog, or I love my something. I love my money. I love my nation. I love my family. Because I get something. It's a happiness that I get that is what we call love. But true love, Bhaktisiddhanta's language is, there's no love in the material world. There is love, but it's otherworldly. And that love is the Advarama happiness that's being spoken of here. So the spark separated from the fire is dull compared to the spark that's brought in direct contact with the fire, then its glow is maximum. So that happiness propensity over here is dull compared to the happiness propensity when it's fully ignited. And the devotee recognizes that. There are moments when, in devotion, we've all experienced a greater happiness compared to that one, is this one. But it exists. The potential is there. But that potential is the potential of realized in the condition of love and maximized in a superlative way in pure love. But minus that pure love, we're over here trying to enjoy happiness independently. That's our disease. And it's not, you know, unique to, we're all, you know, the same hospital. We all have the same disease. And there's physicians giving the treatment for the disease. Some patients take the medicine, some don't. But that's why that propensity is there, and how we can understand, well, where did we get that propensity? Now, how do we apply that propensity so when we're healthy instead of diminished? Struggling for that happiness that doesn't really happen. We've gotten the way that we would like it to happen. We've got our plan, but it doesn't pan out. It always ends in something other, anyway. So the perfection of happiness is that happiness of pure love. And we're being invited into that realm of pure love. Explicitly. Not kind of explicit. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada, he died.